Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord had said to Abram, "Get thee out of the country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless you and curse him that curses you. And in you all families of the earth be blessed." So Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abraham took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls of that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth to go to the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And Abram, passed through the land into the place of Sichem, into the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, Unto thy seed will I give this land, and there builded. Unto thy seed will I give this land, and there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared to him. And he removed from thence into a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there he builded an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed going on still toward the south. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, "Behold now, I know that you are a fair woman to look upon. Therefore, it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see you, that they will say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me, but they will save you alive. Say, I pray thee, that thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of you." And it came to pass that when Abram was come to Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was fair, and the princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house, and he entreated Abram well for her sake. And he had sheep and oxen and he asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. And the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this that you have done to me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say, 'She is my sister,' so that I might have taken her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way." And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. Now you know we're not talking about a history story here, or history lesson, aren't we? We're talking about something going on in our lives, okay? So we go back, and now this is the beginning, because who is called the father of Judaism? Abram. He was the beginning of it. Now, if he's a beginning, just as Adam was a beginning for the natural man, what is this beginning for? The spiritual man. See? But it's another parallel. It's a beginning. See? Abram now is being called, this is a seed that's being called out to spirituality. I want you to walk with God now. Same as Adam was called there and failed, but he said, now it's time to bring forth the other seed. Just as Adam was a type of Christ, so is Abram a type of Christ. Okay? Now, the first word that you see there is what? Now, cross it out because it don't belong there. It just says, the Lord, Yahweh, Father. Father spoke to, it says, now the Lord had said, the next word had should be listed, missing too. It shouldn't be there. So it should say, the Lord said to Abram. That's all it should say. Father spoke to Abram. Okay? Now, that word had makes it look like a past tense thing, doesn't it? But this was a present tense thing. God was saying to Abraham, it's a present tense. If it's not past tense, it's present tense. He said to Abram, the high father, the exalted father, get out of your country. Now, what do you think that's all about, the country? It's a reputation. It represents your reputation. And from your kindred, that's your family. And from your father's house. Now, what does your father's house have to do with you? Absolutely. It's peer pressure, control. And in the natural, the father runs everything. So he said, get away from all your natural stuff and head east to the spiritual stuff. He said, you go where I show you. Okay? So what do we have? Now, it's not saying don't ever have anything to do with your parents or any of your family again. That's not what it's saying. It's saying in your understanding, separate from all the things that they have taken from you. Hear what I'm saying? I'm not saying leave your family. I'm saying separate from all the traditions and the pressures that they put up on you. That pressure is more likely to make you walk away from God than any other thing in the world, those things he just mentioned. True or false? Your family is the greatest hindrance to your walk with God because they have more control over your life. They have more, you give that control to other people in your life, in your family. Okay? And he said, into a land that I will show you. Now this I here is not ego. This is God. God speaking to him. Because it says in the first word of this verse, the Lord, Yahweh, the Father. He said, and I will show you. And I, God again, will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name, nature and character, the Hebrew word shame, I will make your nature and character great, and you shall be a, what? Blessing. Now, that's not true. Now, we see these words in here. Look, there's three words in here about bless. He said, I will make a great nation out of you, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you will be a blessing. Now, the word blessing here, the second word, blessing, not bless, but blessing, is a different word from the first word, bless. And it means, I will make you prosperous. Right? He didn't say make you a blessing, he said make you prosperous. It's not even in the language, that's something added in there. But the word does say prosperous. There's the Strong's number for the word bless there in verse 2 is 1288. It means bless. We can live with that one. But the second one, blessing, comes from the word 1293, and it means prosperous. Yeah, I'll make you prosperous. And I think he did, didn't he? He made Abram very prosperous. And he said, and so now, if God's saying this to him, who's he saying it to? All of Abram's seed. See, everything through his family. Are we seed of Abram? Hello? Then guess what? This promise is not just talking to a man in antiquity. It's talking to you right now. So we have to realize that when he said, and God, the Lord, spoke to Abram, he was speaking to who? Absolutely. It's got to be personal here. And God's speaking to me. He's speaking to you. This is what we got to do. We got to separate from all these things that our culture, our family, and our surroundings has taught us is right. It's contrary to what God said. Okay? Now, family can teach you some good things about God, but sometimes they add their own little twists in, and that takes you away from the thought of God. And that's all he's saying. If you break away from all your comfort zone, and now when you're in the area of your family in the natural, how are you feeling? Comfortable and safe. Now, if I'm comfortable and safe, do you think I'm looking to God for anything? If you walk out, Abraham, take off walking for 3 days and you don't have a clue where you're going. Just take off. And I'll tell you when you get there. How would you feel? A little anticipation and anxiety there, wouldn't there? But you know what that anxiety does to you? It makes you turn around and try to find some comfort in God because you haven't got anything else to get it in. And that's exactly what he's going to do in her life. It's what he's been doing, and he's going to continue to do in her life. It's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Okay? He's making us turn to him. He said, if you will separate from all the things that the family has put upon you, your society, your cultures, get all that off of you, now you can hear me. Do you hear what I'm saying? Because you can't hear God as long as you hear that other voice in your head, Because if two people's talking at the same time, all you got is what? Confusion. Just a bunch of noise. But if you will get rid of the other voice, you'll do just like it said in John 10. My sheep will hear my voice, and the voice of another they will not hear, they will not follow. We'll hear that one voice and we'll hear it clearly. But we have to get rid of all the social stuff, all the cultural stuff. You know, gotta get rid of it. When I separate from that, now I can hear the Father speak clearly. You don't have to bail out on your family. You just have to not let them control and persuade you in the things you say and do with God. You got to work it out in yourself. Okay? In verse 3, it goes on and says, "And I will bless them that bless you." Both of those words are correct, bless. "And curse him that curses you, and in you shall all families," or all people, it should say. It doesn't say family, it should be all people, "of the earth," okay, "will be blessed." And that word is same again, 1288, same as the other two in there. So, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words there, blessed or blessing, or blessed, and one of them is different. And it just says prosperous there in that second verse. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken. That's not what it says. He departed as the Lord spoke. Okay, it's all making everything look past tense. And this King James translation is very good about showing you past tense, future tense, but never present tense in the translation. It's in the language, but it's not in the translation. Okay? And God is a present tense God. God is. Is that true or false? Well, if God is, it's not had or will. It's right now. We've got to see everything in this present tense. If we don't get in this present tense, we're just going to miss something that we God wants us to have. Okay, don't want to miss anything. So Abraham departed as the Lord, Yahweh, spoke to him, and Lot went with him. Now, excuse me, he said, get away from your family. And what did he do? All he's telling you is Lot represents your flesh, okay? Lot represents your flesh. He had children of carnality, begat flesh, okay? Carnal people. But what it's saying here, you're supposed to get away from all your fleshly thinking. Don't take it with you. Just take your wife and go on. Well, he took that with him, and he became a hindrance. All he's showing you is when you begin, you're not going to fully trust God. Is that true or false? Trust in God is something you learn as you go. The more God shows you, the more you can trust God. The more you can step out in God. But you know, to start with, we're all like, well, I don't know if I'm going to walk out on that water or not. Okay? It's not going to be done until God's proved himself to you. And he will do that. It's a process. As we grow, when we're children, there's a lot of things we won't attempt to do. As we grow to be adults, we realize, I can do those things. It's been proven to me, okay? He did, yes. He done things he wasn't supposed to, and see, because there was still security in the natural father's control and wisdom, okay? He was still hanging on to that security blanket. Haven't we all done it? But as we go, like it says in Acts 27, in the third day they lightened the ship with their own hands. You got to come to a place where you say, there it goes. Pitch it over the side yourself. Okay, you can't hold on to stuff forever. And Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. Okay? Now, when it says he was 75 years what? A son. That language right there is not old. It says 75 years a son. He'd been a son for 75 years, so they just took the liberty of saying he was 75 years old. But the language literally says he was a son for 75 years. Okay? There's some things in the figures, and I'm not going to get into it right now. Couldn't possibly be right. You know, there's mistranslations, and I'm not going to... The figures of the numbers right now is not the important thing to me. But I'll show you something real quick. It said, Terah... When he begat, he lived 70 years and begat Abram. Okay? 70. And he was 75 when he left out of Haran. Total that up for me. No, 70 and 75. 145. Well, look at verse 32 in chapter 11. Look what it says. It's not right. Okay. If there's some things in translation errors, and that's not critical. I'm just showing you there's something there, and we're going to go on. Okay. You can look at it later. Do a little research. You'll find out some answers in it. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls, and the word soul there is not correct, it's persons. All the persons that they had gotten in Haran, in that parched, dry place. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. Now, Abraham passed through the land into a place of Sichem. What does that Sichem represent? Sichem, Shechem, same thing. Shoulder. What's the shoulder speak of? Responsibility. When he passed through the plain, this desert place, guess what happens? When you pass through this desert experience in your life, when you begin traveling through this desert, which we all get to do, guess what we get? We start to learn some responsibility. You're going to have to carry some weight. And you know what? That's the last thing you want when you're in that situation in the desert, carrying some extra weight. But how many of us do it? Every one of us. We pack weight we're not designed to carry. Isn't that true? We put that stuff on ourselves. God didn't put it on. We pack it up there and carry it ourselves. And we shouldn't be doing it. That's why he's showing you here. He said, don't take this stuff with you. And what did Abram do? Took it with him. If Abram had listened to God and done exactly what he said, do you think he'd went through all the trouble he went through? Nope. There's a short way and there's a hard way. You can go 40 days or 40 years, which way you want it. That's the patterns. The one who was obedient got it in 40 days. The one who was disobedient got it in 40 years. True? So you can follow the patterns and get there a lot easier, a lot quicker, a whole lot less stress on your body if you want to, or you can be hard-headed and do it your own way, and you're going to go through a long, drawn-out, hard process. And in the end, he's still going to get what he wants. So why fight it? Okay? Be reasonable. See it his way. Okay. And verse 6, it goes on and says, and Abram passed through the land of into place of Shechem to the plain. Or, and the plain is really not plain. It should be an oak grove or the tree of Moreh, which means teacher. So he came to the place, the oak grove or the place of trees in this desert, a place where he could worship. Oaks represent something in the scriptures. What do they represent? Strength and idolatry. So he came to a place where he could get strength from what? From what? I can't hear you. Yeah. Well, you do for a season. God gives you these little things to pacify us, you know, for a season. Paul said, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I acted as a child, but when I became a man, I put them away. Okay? And he gives us things to pacify us for a season until we start to grow up. Then he requires something else. And the Canaanite was then in the land. Oh, my. Canaanite speaks of a zealous people of low degree. And you know what we are when we come into Canaan land? When we first come to God, when God first calls us into Him, we are a zealous people of low degree. We're still as carnal as the day before, but we have a lot of zeal now. And we have no understanding, so we become very dangerous. Don't we? As of an individual, I'm talking about everybody now, when we first come into God, we think we know everything because we got saved because someone told us that. And we're very zealous, and we want to drive it down somebody else's neck. Isn't that the way it usually starts? Not good, but that's the way we do it. Okay? And that's the pattern he's showing us. It's not good, because if Abraham had obeyed it, it could have been a shorter process and taken care of things. Now, it said the Canaanite was in the land. And you know, in Deuteronomy 7, there were sevenites in the land. God put them there. And I'm not going to go there, but it's Deuteronomy 7:1. And there was the Canaanites right there. Okay, into verse 7. And the Lord, here's Yahweh again, appeared to Abram, the high father, and said, to your seed will I give this land. Who are we? How many of you want the promised land? Well, if you want the promised land, you've got to realize something. There's a qualification to receive the promised land. You've got to be what? No, you've got to be a seed of Abraham. It's not your choice. This is God's choice. He said, you didn't choose me, I chose you, didn't he? You've got to be the seed of Abraham to receive this promised land. Well, promised land, what do you think it is? It's the mind of Christ. And he said he promised it to all the seed of Abraham. Okay, if I don't believe I'm a seed of Abraham, do you think I'm ever going to possess the mind of Christ, the promised land? Well, see, everybody says, oh, but I'm a sinner. As long as you think you're a sinner, you will never receive the promise of God. And the promise of God is the mind of Christ. There's the liberty and freedom. When you understand who you are, when you have your identity down pat. See, when I know who my Father is, I'll know who I am. Is that right? That's what you've got to come into. You've got to know who you are. And all the other stuff means nothing. You can quote this thing. You can quote verse for verse this whole book. And if you don't know that you're the seed of Abraham and that you have a promise promised to you that you can receive now and not sometime off in the somewhere, you'll never make it. You'll never receive the promise until you know who you are. Do you hear what I'm saying? I can't help from getting excited this morning because this is something real. You've got to know who you are. You've got to know this identity. You've got to know what your heritage is. Where did I come from? I'm the seed of Abraham, and I have a right to this mind of Christ. It's not something up in the heavenlies where I can't touch it. It's something inside of me right now and inside of you, and you have a right to it. Okay? He said, I will give this land, and there he built an altar to the Lord who appeared to him. I don't see any proclamation to build an altar. He chose within himself to make a decision to build an altar here. God didn't tell him to, didn't praise him for doing it, did he? He just said he did it. That's a natural instinct. Whenever God does something in your life, you want to make an idol out of it. And that's what this altar was. It was an altar to God, he said, but don't you think it was for his benefit? Think for a minute. Whose benefit was this altar? Did God gain anything from it? What did Abraham gain from it? He felt good, I guarantee you. He felt good because he'd done something for God. God doesn't want you to do something for him. He wants you to obey him. Is that true? Okay. And I guarantee you, Abraham said about this time, whoo, boy, God had a good one there. I'll give him a good altar. What good does that do? How about giving him your mind? Huh? Let him work with it. Yeah, he's on his journey, but he's just showing you, don't feel bad when you do these things. Know that he's showing you this because it's an error in the way of thinking, and it shows you, if you will think about this, it'll show you what not to do. Make sense? Shows you in his immaturity. He's starting out with this thing. This is a new process for him, so he's still holding on to the old ways. Because where did he come from? Where's the town he come from? Ur. The Ur of Chaldees, which was very big into moon worship and stars and all that stuff. The pagan worship. So he was still dragging his paganism into it, just like we do in our church worlds today. We come out of the world, and the first thing we do is we start worshiping anything and everything somebody sticks in front of us. Is that true? Not good way, but that's what we do. It's a process of coming out of it. No condemnation. I'm just showing you, we all go through it. We've all been guilty of it, so we can't point fingers at somebody across the street in another church. No, that's not what it's about. It's about realizing in you that you've got to change. Okay? And he didn't remove. He proceeded from there to a mountain on the east of Bethel. House of God. Bethel. House of God. He proceeded to a mountain east of there. Why didn't he go to the house of God?
Anybody think about that?
Anybody got any ideas? Why would he not go to the house of God, but he went to a mountain that was on the east of the house of God? He was still on a journey. And he went to a high place. And see, that's what we do in our journey. We go to high places, and today we call them churches. We go to a high place to worship instead of going to the house of God, and know ye not that you're the house of God. We're not going to worship where we should. Because if I can't worship in my life every day in me, if I can't worship God, I got no business going to a church. That's something to make me feel good. And that's not what it's about. It's about me finding out who God is in me. What's His purpose and plan? I will never find that out until I have that personal experience with God. Okay? And that's the same with you. We all got to walk it. There's no free pass for anybody. We don't get any shortcuts. We all got to take the same way. He said, I am the way. He went to the east of Bethel, this mountain, and he pitched his tent. Tells me he's planning on staying a while. You don't pitch your tent unless you plan on staying, do you? He planned on, that's it. I have arrived. I've got to this high place. Well, surprise, there's more to it than that. Having Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. What's Ai? It's a heap of ruins. Well, you know what? God's sitting on one side, and where I left, a pile of ruins. And I'm sitting in the middle. And you know my old hillbilly proverb, he that rides a fence gets a sore crotch. You stay in the middle, you're going to get hurt. You better get out. What did Jesus say in Revelation? I'd rather have you hot or cold. If you're lukewarm in the middle, I'll vomit you out of my mouth. There's no place for the center of the road here, is it? Get on. It's choosing sides. Are you for me or against me? Sure. Sure. The fleshly side. Absolutely. And there he built another altar and called upon the nature and character of God. What do you think? He built an altar and called upon the nature of God. What do you think? Huh? Build a church and pray and look what I've done. Kind of like Peter when he said, Lord, do you want me to build you a tabernacle there on the Mount of Transfiguration? Yeah, I can build maybe three of them, one for you, one for Abram, maybe one for me too. Oh, gosh. It's part of the process. It's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. We can all laugh about this because we've all done it. And if we haven't done it yet, we're going to do it. That's the process. But don't get into condemnation and guilt because you've made a mistake. He's saying, encourage you. The journey's not over, is it? The journey's just beginning. Come on. So Abram journeyed going on still toward the south. What does that mean? That's right. He wants to go comfortable. And you know that's the nature of everybody. Even when we get started, we still want the easy way. We want it easy. See, that's okay. Everybody does it. Don't think that you're the only one that does it. Everybody, including me, would like the easy way. But I found out something through my journey. It's not the productive way. Not at all. It never produces anything but problems in my life when I try to take a shortcut. Just go ahead and do it the way it's got to be done and get it done right the first time. You know, like Larry the Cable Guy says, get her done. Just do her. Whatever you got to do. And there was a famine in the land. Well, when we first get started, I guarantee you there is no grain in that vessel. Grain representing the Word. You build altars and worshiping traditions of men. So there's no Word in you, is there? So if there's no Word in you, how's it going to transform you? Be you transformed by the renewing of your mind. The only way you can renew your mind is change your thought process. And the only thing that will change your thought process is understanding what this book says. I'm not saying carnally understand it. I'm saying understand by the Spirit of God. Know the truth of this thing. He said, if you'll continue in my word, you'll be my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Hello? That's all he wants you to do, is understand what he wants. How much easier is it to fulfill what God wants in your life if you know what he wants? There's an old saying amongst the hillbillies around here, a blind hog will find an acorn in the woods once in a while. And you know, if you just go on praying about everything you see and hear, sooner or later you're going to hit something that's the will of God. And you know, the church world is the only place in the world where 99.9% failure is okay. Because you can pray 1,000 prayers and one of them come true and say, oh, look what God did. Well, what about your 999,999 failures? If you're talking to God and God answers prayer, how come he isn't answering every one of them? Oh, no. They're not answering for this reason. They weren't prayed what he wanted. So you've got to pray his will, not your will, or not somebody else's will. If you want to pray, do you hear me praying all kinds of things? Why? Because if I don't know what God says, then I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Any man who says they come in the name of the Lord and prays or prophesies anything and it does not come to pass, they are not a man of God. Fear them not, according to the book. And these people out here praying every day, putting on big shows for thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, and none of it comes to pass, and still everybody keeps saying, whoo, man of God. Just because he set up and performed for him like a trained seal. I'm sorry, that's not God. If you want to hear God, hear God. You don't have to have somebody else because God lives in you. That's what it's all about. He came and died on a cross in John 14 when he said, I got to go away and prepare a place. He was preparing your tabernacle that he could live in you. And he had to die on the cross and do away with the last Adam so that you wouldn't have to worry about that keeping you from knowing who you are in God anymore. So now we got that done. So now why aren't we utilizing it? On the day of his resurrection, the stone was rolled away. True or false? Okay, then why are you still sitting in the grave? Why are you still in the cave in the ground? Why aren't we getting up and walking out and proceeding into life like he did? He got up and walked out, didn't he? Read Romans 6. It says that when he died, you died and were buried with him in baptism. And when he resurrected, what happened? Do you believe it? Then why aren't you getting up walking out of the graves today and living life like he did? See? I'm not telling you about going on and trying and making miracles or anything. I'm just talking about you as an individual living your life should get up out and walk out of it today. Because you know that he's already taken care of it. True or false? Okay? It's not condemnation. This is truth. You've got to believe it. If you don't believe it, you'll never do it. I've said for my life for years, I'm going to do things. And I never did them because I didn't believe I could do them. But the book says I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And when my mind becomes purified to the point where I believe it, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to do that very thing that I said I could do, but my mind kept saying, you can't do it. Watch and see. In your life, watch and see. As you grow, you will begin to do things that you could never do. And it's not important about anybody else what they think. It's what you and God are talking about in your head. Because it's a personal thing. See, I can't tell you what's right for your life. I will never try to be a sheriff in your life and tell you how to live your life. I'm here to edify and encourage you. To encourage you to come on. You can make it. Jesus didn't come to condemn, did he? He came to deliver you. I'm here to help you be delivered. Nothing else. I like this chapter. There was a famine in the land, and Abraham went to Egypt. And you notice he went the direction he went? He went lower. Instead of reaching up to God, what did he do? He went back to his natural thinking and his own physical strength. I know where it's at, so I'm going to use my own intellect and solve this problem. Probably wasn't a good idea, was it? But see, don't we all do that in our beginnings? We go to church and we come out of church, something happens, and we'll rely on our own physical strength to try to correct the problem rather than going to God for everything. One thing I found out about God, God does not get annoyed if you talk to Him every day. I know you. Some people can make you annoyed if they talk to you all the time, just constantly. But you know what? God's never annoyed. And you know, I've never been annoyed at God talking to me. Usually dumbstruck, you know, and all the things He says, but yet I've never been bored or aggravated by it. And God wants you to talk to Him every day, all the time. That's why Paul said, pray without ceasing. Okay, but he went down to Egypt to do what? To sojourn there or to dwell there. And it means temporarily dwell there. See, in our minds, we got this idea. Well, I know what God said, but I just wiped out everything He said before that. But see, that's our thinking when we begin. It's okay to know that in our process, we're going to make some mistakes like this and say, well, I know God said this, but I got to do this because this is what I can see. You have to live by the faith that's within you. You can't live by someone else's faith except God's faith. And the just shall live by his faith. But it says God's given every man a measure of faith. Okay? So you live by the faith that you have. And if your faith can't take you into to waiting on God, then you're going to run back just like Abraham did when he didn't wait on God. Ran back and created what? Who'd he create? Ishmael. There you go. Thank you. We don't need any Ishmaels in our life, do we? We don't need those. We'll get to them later, but everybody going to have one sooner or later. Best thing is get it over with and go on. Okay? And when he came, let's see, where's that? Back in 10? To dwell there temporarily, he thought, because the famine was what? Severe in the land. Well, if it's severe, that means there's just not nothing to eat on there, is there? Well, when there's nothing there to eat, what do you start doing in the natural? You start hunting. You start going back into your natural beastly ways of, I'm going to find something somewhere and find something to sustain my life. Instead of trusting in God, it'll come. Trust in God. And it came to pass when he was near to enter into Egypt that he said to Sarai, and Sarai is the dominative person, a dominator, and this is the soul, isn't it? The woman in his life. And she's a dominator if you let her. Okay? It's talking about each one of us is a soul. And so he got ready to enter into Egypt, and that's duality, isn't it? He said to Sarai's wife, behold now, I know that you are a beautiful woman to view. To look at you, soul, you're a beautiful thing. See? And when we're in our beginnings, we think that soul is just one wonderful thing. These emotions and feelings that we have, they're fantastic, aren't they? They're just beautiful. But you know they're very deceptive. You know why? Because she lied. Did she lie or not? So guess what the soul is? Very deceptive. They're beautiful on the outside, but they got a lot of stuff inside. A lot of deception. Okay? She lied. Therefore it shall come to pass, he said, when the Egyptians shall see you, that they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save you alive. Tell me what's driving Abram. Fear. Fear, which is one of the emotions. Fear is driving. He's afraid he's going to die. Now, I see this so prevalent in most of the church realm. I can't wait to get to heaven. Well, excuse me, the way you teach it, you got to die to get there, and nobody's lining up. Nobody wants to die. They'll give everything in the world to draw one more breath. Isn't that true? Okay, got a problem here. Abraham had the same problem. It's natural in the human. He's showing you a pattern of your life and showing you that if you want to get there, you got to die. But see, we're not talking about physical, are we? We're talking about giving it up in the mind and letting God have control. See? And the soul, guess what? Didn't she agree to go with him? Didn't she agree to the deceptions? They were telling a half-truth. She was his half-sister, but it wasn't the total truth, was it? And see, in certain parts of our life, we can get by with half-truths, but sooner or later, you're going to have to come to a place where you begin to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Right? in one part of the scripture, doesn't it say, at one point in time he winked at sin, but now he calls all men to repent, change the way they think. You can't think that telling a story is okay any longer. You got to grow up. Okay? Say, I pray you that you are my sister, in order that it may be well with me, in order that my soul live because of you. He's trying to pump her up. Hey, you're going to be great if you take care and save me. They ain't going to kill you because you're too pretty. And see, most people think too much of their soul to ever lay a finger on a soul. You hear what I'm saying? See, we usually think our soul is too important to us. Well, if I go back to Genesis 2:7 and find out how the soul was formed, guess what? I got a different view of that soul. See, my woman needs to learn her place. And she's very dominating. We call her the dominator. Okay? We don't need her dominating this life. Because the soul was created out of the flesh of Adam when he was formed out of the dust of the earth. The Spirit of God was breathed into that flesh and it became a living soul. So the soul is two, became one on the natural, and guess what it was? It was a soul. And that soul is a mixture. As long as we're in a soulish part of this or soulish thinking, we've got a mixture, which is also confusion, isn't it? You got two people telling you what to do. We got self and we got the Spirit of God, just like the two trees in the midst of the garden. Which one are you going to take from? The good or evil from the same tree, or life? Which one you want to live from? And that's the same choice that everyone has. And it shows you what the normal is. And I know there's no word normal in the book, but it's normal for people to live this way. Even people that's following after God still have to fight through this process of learning right and wrong, of making decisions that's incorrect and recorrecting that decision to the right decision. Do you hear me? It's not about always making the right choice, because the men of God through this book, and women both, made mistakes, but they quickly changed when they found out they made a mistake. Did God get mad and kill them all? No. It's a process of getting through there. Okay? And it came to pass that when Abram was come to Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman because she was beautiful. And the princes of Pharaoh saw her and did what? Literally it says in the language, they raved about her. Wow, did you see that looker? That's what they were doing. They were raving about how beautiful she was. And the woman was taken, she was raved about before Pharaoh. What does his name mean? He's a great house. Well, great house in who? In himself, in duality, in the world, okay? In the natural, he was a great person. He was an Egyptian king. And Pharaoh is just a title for Egyptian king. It wasn't his name, okay? Don't think it's a name. It's just a title for an Egyptian king. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abram well for her sake. And he had sheep and oxen and asses and men servants and maid servants and asses, she asses and camels. Now, he entreated him well for this. Now, what does Abram's name mean? Exalted Father. How do we view that? As a positive or a negative? Should be, but is it really? In this sense, he's not. He's exalted in what? Because he's still called Abram. He hasn't come to the place of the nature change or the name change yet, has he? So he's still in his carnality. He is still yet a natural thinking man trying to mix in with it God, with his thinking and God's thinking. How many of us have been guilty of that? Every single living one of us. We've all been guilty of it. Not a bad thing. He's just showing you that. You know, this is a chapter of encouragement. Anybody that sees this as condemnation and guilt's looking the wrong way. He said, hey, the one I started with was a mess. Why should you be concerned if you've got messes in your life? You should be encouraged. That's what I'm telling you this for. It should encourage you. If Abram, the faithful father, lied and done all these things, was deceptive, what's the difference between you and him? I'm not giving you a license to do anything. I'm just saying in your process, you will make those mistakes. And God says, it's okay. You're going to learn from them. Sure he did. He knows what the Spirit's going to take you to. But you got to go through a process so you can what? Experience and learn. And God, the Lord, Father, Yahweh, struck Pharaoh and his house with what? Not great plagues, but it says literally a great blow. Struck him with a great blow because of the words of Sarai, Abram's wife. And see, because of the words of are omitted. The reason that God struck him is because Sarai lied and deceived that man. By her words, she got him in trouble. See, we're not talking about the natural woman now. Don't go the wrong way in this thing. We're talking about the soul. And she used her words to back the lies. And she purported those lies to that Pharaoh, didn't she? She dominated the great house, got a lot of trouble started. So whenever our emotions, our soul begins to reign, we can look for one thing, trouble. Trouble, trouble, trouble. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that you have done to me? Why did you not explain to me that she was your wife? Why didn't you tell me the truth? The truth will do what to you? It'll set you free. See, and what Abram was, when he lied to that Pharaoh, he knew he lied, and yet he knew sometime there's going to be a confrontation, and he just had it. What he did not want to do with that Pharaoh was have a confrontation. He was afraid of him. And here this Pharaoh, the king, comes back and said, why didn't you tell me the truth? He could have very easily said, take his head off for lying to me. But God's grace and mercy is upon us. That's why he didn't die. God's grace and mercy said, I've got this seed called for a purpose, and in spite of everything that his natural thinking can do and his soulish thinking can do to stir things up, I'm still going to prevail in my purpose. Okay? No matter what, I'm going to prevail. Doesn't the book say his plans and purposes will prevail? We don't have to worry about the end, because the only thing we got to worry about is walking through the middle of it. It said he started it, and he's going to finish it. So if he started, all you've got to do is get up and start walking, and when you get there, he said, I'll let you know. You take off and walk, and when you get there, I'll let you know when you get there, didn't he? See? Don't worry about anything else, just the journey. Take the journey. And the destination is the wonderful thing, but the journey will all pass. Once you've traveled so far, it's passed, isn't it? It's gone. Just keep focused on the destination where he tells you to go. Verse 19, he said, why did you say she's your sister that I could take her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold your wife, take her and go your way. He said, why'd you lie to me? Why didn't you just tell me the truth? Do you think that Pharaoh was lacking any entertainment for women? Had anybody he wanted. And all he did was put him in a place where he couldn't possibly do anything but get in trouble. Okay? He said, you take her and get out of here. I don't need that. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away and his wife and all that he had. You know what? When you're playing religion, look what happens. You play religion and you begin to play these games of deception and these soulish emotions and all this stuff, and guess what happens? Even the world will reject you. Did you hear the Pharaoh sent him away? I don't even want, take him, get out of here. I don't even want you. Because it's religion. Yes, it is when you see it the proper way. When the world rejects religion. See, even though they're not serving God, they know what religion is and they know it stinks. It's not good. It's a beautiful thing that even the pagans, I can go talk to people that would never go to church. I can sit, and I do it almost all 4 or 5 days a week. I sit and talk to people who wouldn't go to church, don't I, Bob? And these people will sit and listen, and they will ask me questions that you would never think to come out of someone who quote, isn't a quote Christian. They want to know lots of things about God, but they wouldn't go to a church because they've rejected all the deception and the lies and the performance and the idolatry that church has given them. And they know it's hypocrisy. They know it's not real. When they see the people go to church on Sunday and on Monday, they're robbing you in their businesses by cheating and jacking the prices up and messing everything around, manipulations, lying to you every day. They see it. They're not stupid. So guess what? It's a wonderful thing when it comes to this point in your life. You'll be rejected because of your duality, your hypocrisy, and your religion, because God didn't tell you to do it, did he? Again, if you do only what he told you to do, you'll be okay. Just do what Father says, nothing else. I'm encouraged by this, and you should be encouraged by it. Okay? I'm done.